This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
It is David Gao. Sadly, at the moment, I am lacking Carla Dawson, the Gloss. She will be coming in soon. She is at a school board meeting. Ron, can you believe that? I mean, this is a woman who by day goes to school board meetings and by night hosts a sports radio show.
I was going to say, by night, she's the princess of darkness.
Well, I think what she does is she puts on her school board clothes. It's almost like
she's
Clark,
a school marm.
Well, yeah. Clark Kent has a nice-looking suit on, and then he takes it off, and there's Superman underneath. She'll strip out of that school board outfit, come running in here. She'll probably be wearing a cape when she joins us later this hour.
Do you think she'll just come straight through the glass this time, just straight through the window?
I have no doubt. She will make a grand entrance.
Or she'll just suddenly appear, like, you know, have those other superpowers where she can just teleport.
Well, she is the Gloss, and I am the Boss, and that is Ron Culver behind the glass. So the one thing you have to do here, and it's always dangerous to quote Hillary Rodham Clinton, but without the Gloss.
You're in a safe space. It's okay.
It's going to be okay. It takes a village to replace the Gloss, does it not?
Oh, it definitely does.
We have a village today. We actually, in this first hour when the Gloss will not be here, we have Ron Culver behind the glass, and we're going to have joining us Pat Kennedy, our NCAA analyst and former coach of 40 years, I think, in the NCAA ranks. And he will be the guy who will make sense of everything that's going on in the NCAA.
I mean, literally, think about it. It's only the first weekend of what we call March Madness, even though that officially hasn't started yet.
Right, but the madness has.
The madness has.
And so he will make sense of all that. One of the elements of madness is the whole Sean Miller, he said, no, he didn't say, controversy in Arizona. We're going to ask Pat Kennedy what is really going on there. We'll also ask him to weigh in on Michigan's big weekend. We'll get a lot of insights from Pat Kennedy. Also in this theme that it takes a village, we're going to get to speak later on to Brian Baldinger, NFL.com, and he will weigh in on all things at the Combine. It's been a big week for the NFL. And lastly, but not leastly, we will get a chance to take a look at the NBA. And there was a big matchup over the weekend. It was the Rockets beating the Celtics, and then the Cleveland Cavaliers appear to be waning from their honeymoon. We'll take a look at all these things. NCAA, NFL, NBA, later this hour. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
If you do-it-yourselfers are looking for the right tool for the job, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts Power Torque Tools DIY Day Sale. You'll find a wide selection of Power Torque Tools on sale now and guaranteed for life. Power Torque Tools DIY Day Sale is going on now at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Okay, for the millions around the globe who've tuned in to hear Carla Dawson, have no fear. She will be joining us later this hour. She's at a school board meeting, and she will be coming in at about 45 minutes after the hour, joining us here on the show. But before she does, let me frame this conversation this way. Ron, I might ask you this. If I were to say, faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound, who is that?
Superman.
No.
Oh.
That is Saquon Barkley. That is the great running back out of Penn State who has lit the NFL world on fire with an extraordinary combine.
I'm not off, though.
Well, you're in the neighborhood.
Okay.
And he is the new Superman. I will say it's really been fun, the whole combine thing. Remember, it wasn't that long ago that nobody really even knew what the combine was. Nobody paid attention to it. There certainly wasn't wire-to-wire coverage. Now, all day today, all of our TV sets have been turned onto the combine. Everybody stops and says, who's running that one? Who's there? Who's that one? The combine has become an event. It's a great event. Saquon Barkley has made the most of it. This is a guy who came in and he measured 6 feet, 233 pounds. Now, just frame that. I'm 6 feet and I'm 185 pounds. This is a guy who's 233 at just 6 feet, so he's got lots of bulk to him. And yet he came in and he ran a 40-yard dash at a 4.41. There was a 4.42, outstanding 40-yard dash time. His vertical jump was 41 inches high, and he benched 29 reps on the bench press. So he's got strength, he's got leaping ability, and he's got speed.
Not only that, I don't remember the time on his shuttle run. I know it was somewhere in the low 20s.
He is possibly the best athlete that we've seen in some time.
He clearly is right now.
Certainly by those stats. But also, of course, the risk at the combine always is that somebody gets overwhelmed by stats and these numbers that are measured, and yet it's a guy who doesn't play well in the field. But Barkley's a guy who plays well in the field.
Yeah, and there's tape to prove that as well. I think a lot of people right now are looking at Barkley almost as coming in similarly as Randy Moss did. Randy Moss had all, you know, he blew everyone's mind away at the combine.
Yep.
Yet he still had all the tape to go back to show you how incredible he actually was.
And he should have gone perhaps number one overall, but of course there were character issues about him. There was a checkered history. He slipped in the draft. No character issues about Saquon Barkley.
No, just beaming with confidence right now. He actually, you know, there's a great soundbite out there where he was actually said that he's just going to dominate the NFL. He's going to come in and he's just going to do what he's always been doing. But he said this before his workouts at the combine. And then you see all the effort that he put in, all the things that he just did. You really have to start to believe him now.
Well, it is interesting. I'm sure all these guys are coached on how to handle the media during this window. But nearly all of them have a similar answer, that they have great confidence that they, especially individually, each one of them would tout that they should be the number one pick. And they will all say they have a great deal of confidence about how they'll do. There's no sort of coaching of humility in this league anymore.
No, yeah. He will give out the cookie cutter answers. It was a great offensive line. We played a really tough team, blah, 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 blah. But it's almost refreshing to hear someone just say to everyone, like, you know what? Yes, you want me as your number one pick. I'm the game changer. And that's practically what he just showed the world right now.
No doubt. You mentioned Randy Moss as a comparison. I think that's a very interesting one, a compelling one. There were two others that came out. One is that there's only one other player in this history of measurement at the combine who is able to do both 25 bench reps and have a vertical of 40 inches or more, and that was last year's number one pick, Myles Garrett. But, of course, Garrett is a 6'4", 270-pound pass rusher, making the comparison really stunning. There's Barkley, a quick running back with that kind of strength and leaping ability.
Yeah, it's... If he's not, like, at this point, you look at Cleveland Browns' options, like what they can do. They hold the number one pick and the number four pick. After this weekend's performance, where none of the quarterbacks really did anything to prove that they were better than any of the other four, you know, there's really four quarterbacks that are kind of in the shuffle, and, you know, the consensus is that any one of them could be the number one pick. If I'm the Cleveland Browns right now, sitting with that number one pick, I think I'd go Barkley first, and then see what's left at number four.
Well, if you believe in random outcomes with quarterback picks, which history has borne out, and you look at these guys, and it is hard to distinguish among the quarterbacks, taking Barkley is the safe pick. Barkley is much more of a sure thing than any of the four quarterbacks.
Exactly. And as far as you get, then you won't be looked at as, oh, you made a mistake picking Josh Allen or Josh Rosen or Sam Darnold or, Baker Mayfield is, the fourth one in that mix. You don't look like the Browns browned again picking so-and-so, because if you wait and you're hesitant on picking Barkley, guarantee you he's not going to be there at that fourth pick.
All right, but here's how you brown again is that you take – well, you wait and see which quarterback drops to you at four, and it turns out it's the wrong one. And then they're all going to say, oh, the Browns had a chance at – pick your guy, Josh Allen. They could have taken him number one, but the Giants got him at number two, and the Giants go on and soar with Josh Allen. And let's say the Browns pick Josh Rosen at four, and it's a bust. Anyway, there's always an opportunity for the Browns to be the Browns.
Then what they need to do then is go out. They have the cap space. Go out and just buy a quarterback that's already proven himself in the league, whether it's going after Nick Foles or Kirk Cousins, even though Nick Foles, I know, isn't on the market right now. But, I mean, they have that fourth pick. They could always trade. I'm sure the Eagles would love to have the fourth pick overall and, you know, have Nick Foles off their hands. Or go Kirk Cousins or why am I forgetting the Vikings?
Well, A.J. McCarron's available, too. You've got Case Keenum out there. There are certainly a number of free agent quarterbacks.
I don't think A.J. McCarron, though, is a safe pick.
So I don't have the confidence that A.J. McCarron's ready to step in. He's been in the league for 4 years and only played a few games. But it is interesting. The Browns fell in love with him a year ago, tried to trade for him. They had the botched trade. So they may take another look at him. The one thing I would note is I don't think Kirk Cousins is going to go to the Browns. Case Keenum, maybe. Well, I guess it's all a domino game, but here, if Kirk Cousins goes to the Vikings, Keenum gets popped out onto the market. Maybe the Broncos will chase him then, the Cardinals will chase him then, but certainly the Browns are in that mix. It would be perhaps ideal if the Browns could just sign somebody on whom they could count and then use those other picks for other positions.
No, I absolutely agree, because I mean, they have, I think they have six in the first three rounds or something, or six in the top 100 or something.
It's well, they've got the ridiculous first and the fourth pick overall in the first round. The first and the fourth pick overall in the second round, and then also in the second round, they've got the Eagles' second-round pick. So they've got five picks in the top two rounds. I can't ever remember a team having that kind of treasure trove entering into the draft.
Yeah, and those all are perfect trade bait.
Well, interestingly, the word on the street now is that the Eagles are open to trading Nick Foles, but they're looking for a bounty much like they got when they traded Sam Bradford. Recall, they traded Sam Bradford to the Vikings and got a number one pick or a first-round pick and a fourth-round pick for Sam Bradford. And he was not a Super Bowl MVP. So the Eagles are going to really look for something healthy in return if they're going to trade Nick Foles.
Yeah, we're definitely heading into the crazy time in the NFL.
It's crazy time. It's a fun time. The combine quarterbacks all showing off. I guess one of the striking things to me among the big five quarterbacks, and of course in some people's classification, there's only really a big four. Some would say a big three. But Lamar Jackson did not choose to run, and that might have been his best asset. Sam Darnold chose not to throw, and that's his best asset. It didn't make any sense to me.
And Josh Allen was actually throwing well, which I think confused and surprised a lot of people.
Well, it's out on YouTube. It's really fascinating to watch. Allen does have a monster arm. He threw some beautiful 70-yard bombs down the field. On arm strength alone, he certainly turned some heads.
Yeah, but again, I don't know if you can. I don't know if you can go off of arm strength alone. It's a little. I don't know. I was listening to Salisbury earlier on the Salisbury show, and he still is not that high on Josh Allen.
No, accuracy has been the issue that people keep raising on Josh Allen.
He said it's one thing you can throw 70 yards, that's great. But if there's no one there to catch it, or if you're overthrowing them constantly, there's no point in it.
All right, when we come back, actually what is promised this hour, we're gonna get a chance to visit with Pat Kennedy, our NCAA analyst. Will talk to him about all things March Madness. And then later this hour, we'll ask Brian Baldinger about the quarterbacks in the combine. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
Joining us now on SB Nation Radio is Pat Kennedy. He is our NCAA tournament analyst, and notably, he had 40 years as a college basketball coach and has coached 27 players who ultimately reached the NBA. Pat, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, guys, great to be with you. Great time of the year.
Well, let's start right at the top at Virginia. Do you see them as a true number one? I mean, they've disappointed in the tournament in the past with high seedings. How should we view this team?
You know, I'll be very honest with you guys, and I think if you really give it some thought, you may agree. I don't think we have a true number one team in the country. I think you can take a look at when Michigan State was playing extremely well, when Villanova was playing really well early in the year. I think you take a look at the Carolina team that did beat Duke, and Mike Krzyzewski said they're the most talented league team in the country. You've got Duke. I mean, I just don't really think this was a year where, you know, we've had the Dukes, Carolinas, Kentuckys, Kansases, where they've been purely a number one team in the country. I think I've said this from the beginning of the early part of this season. I think there's 12 or 14 teams that'll have a good shot at getting to the Final Four, and any one of them, quite frankly, can possibly win a national championship. So I think we're as wide open as we are. I think how healthy you are, how well you're playing is all very, very important. That's why I think an interesting story bubbling up right now is Notre Dame. You know, they get Bonzi back here, and they're playing well, and they could be a scary team as well. So a lot of interesting things going on here down the stretch.
This is Pat Kennedy, our NCAA tournament analyst and former basketball coach. Tell us about your impressions of Michigan this weekend. They were very impressive over the tournament.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what, they're playing extremely well.
Yep.
John Beilein has done a great job. They've got terrific inside-outside ability. The kid Wagner is just a terrific talent. I think he's a guy you can look at and say he's got a chance to be, I think, an outstanding pro. Maybe not a Dirk Nowitzki, maybe a poor man's Dirk Nowitzki. But in terms of a college team right now, winning the Big Ten championship, again, Michigan's one of those 14 teams that you'd have to put in there and say, obviously, they can make the Final Four. And if they get there, they're probably good enough to win a national championship. So that's the difference in this year than I've seen in the recent years.
So how impressive is Kansas's win? I mean, the Big 12 champion for 14 years?
You know, I'll tell you what, guys, we have all seen some sensational benchmarks in college basketball. Obviously, the John Wooden UCLA teams and the number of championships that they won and the number of consecutive championships and consecutive games they won until Notre Dame and the Digger Phelps team beat them at Notre Dame. But I will tell you one thing, knowing how competitive the Big 12 is, and they're going to get eight teams. I mean, you know, the Big 12, it's amazing. They're going to end up with eight teams, I think, in the tournament, which is just an incredible number. And to think that, you know, year in, year out, when you get the competitive level of the Oklahomas and the Texases and the rivalries of a Texas State or Kansas State, excuse me, versus Kansas, to think that they have won the number of championships they have is just in a row is just really remarkable. I think of all the, you know, Duke's had some great runs. So has North Carolina and Kentucky as well. But I think the most consistent, unbelievable run in recent college basketball has been what Kansas has been able to do with inside the Big 12.
Yeah, if the metric is consistency, Kansas's record is just amazing.
So. Yeah, it really is. And, you know, guys, having coached in the ACC, and, you know, it means you got to play Carolina home and away, you got to play Duke home and away.
Yep.
When you start having to play teams like that on a consistent basis, home or away, beating them collectively and on a consistent basis is very difficult. I don't think anybody looks at that achievement of Kansas and says it's not tremendous. Now, do some pundits look at that and say, okay, how come we don't have some more national championships? But on the other hand, winning national championships is not easy. Yeah, how many teams have gotten into the tournament, won one or two games in the NCAA tournament, but not been able to get past the Sweet 16 or Final Eight?
We're talking to Pat Kennedy, who, among other notable things, he won the 1992 ACC Coach of the Year while he was at Florida State. So we are broadcasting from Houston, Texas, so I have to ask you about the University of Houston Cougars and the season that Kelvin Sampson put together, a record of 24 wins and 6 losses. We've been impressed here. Frankly, it was a much better year than I anticipated. Were you surprised at their success?
Well, let me tell you this, guys. And Kelvin Sampson had a difficult bump in the road when he was at Indiana.
Yep.
You know, he had such great teams at Oklahoma, constantly ranked in the top 10, outstanding individual players. He always did a great job of the team concept and playing together as a group and also developing individual players. So when Kelvin could not coach on the college ranks and went with the Houston Rockets, and I remember one of my great players, Sam Cassell, played for the Rockets and won a NBA championship there. I thought, what a great town for Kelvin, and obviously he was with the Rockets. And then once he took over the job at Houston, you guys know Houston job has been difficult. Dear friend of mine, Tom Penders, head coach there. Guy Lewis did an incredible job there. But there's not been that consistency of, let's say, you know, like a Michigan that gets a packed house every night. The Houston program would go up and down in terms of the real interest in it. So Kelvin Sampson, give him incredible credit for bringing him to this level. The place is packed. They're winning big games. They are definitely, in my opinion, a lock for the NCAA tournament. And if he just stays there and doesn't get a little antsy to move somewhere else, Kelvin could probably end up putting Houston in the NCAA tournament for a number of years here consecutively. So, believe me, I've been in a long time, coached against the very best, beat the very best. Kelvin Sampson is as good a coach as there is in the country.
We're talking to Pat Kennedy, our NCAA tournament analyst. So talk about the job that Bruce Pearl has done at Auburn.
Well, you know, that's kind of off the charts. And for all of us that know Bruce Pearl, when I was at DePaul University, you know, Bruce was back coaching Division II basketball in the Midwest. And then he was involved with a bit of a recruiting scandal against the University of Illinois. And that kind of went by the wayside. And then, obviously, he resurfaced at Milwaukee, Wisconsin, did a great job, and then ultimately put himself in position to be hired at Tennessee and did a great job at Tennessee. If you remember in his early years there, the enthusiasm, he would come out. Obviously, at the end of the career of the wonderful Pat Head, she was almost a perfect compliment for Bruce Pearl. Bruce, very vivacious and outgoing. Then the problem at Tennessee, another NCAA problem. And I think in a number of these situations, I think Bruce just kind of fouled up a little bit. I'm not so sure, as I know Bruce, that there was an intent to overly cheat or get an advantage. Bruce is very outgoing. And so to see him recover and go to Auburn, the support's unbelievable right now. They like him. He's enthusiastic. A lot of those Southeastern schools, you got to be honest, they don't worry a whole lot about the NCAA and NCAA probation. That's just the way of the world. I coached at Florida State in Tallahassee, so they're not overly worried about the NCAA. Those folks at Auburn, at that university, in that area of the country, are very excited about the energy that Bruce Pearl has brought to not just Auburn, but to that area of the country for the game of basketball.
So we've got about 1 minute left. You mentioned the NCAA. We've got Sean Miller out in Arizona, all of the banter back and forth. What do you make of all that?
Well, I think it's got to be resolved. Yep. I don't think it can be left open-ended. I think that's going to be the thing. Are there voices on a tape? Why was the tape made? What was the purpose of the tape? I still think the FBI is going to end up resolving this. I don't think, that, again, they can let it just fall by the wayside. So I'm not so much concerned about what the NCAA or the newspapers or ESPN or Yahoo Sports thinks about this. I want to know what the FBI does or doesn't know, and then I want to see what steps have to be taken from that point on. This is still a very serious situation. No one should underestimate the seriousness of what this means for college athletics. So this has got to be sorted out, and it's got to be cleaned up, and I'm very confident that the powers to be in college athletics will do that.
Very good. Coach Pat Kennedy, thank you so much for joining us here on SB Nation Radio.
Great being with you guys.
Well, that was a real treat. Pat Kennedy knows the NCAA just as well as anybody. I'll tell you what, the whole saga with Sean Miller in Arizona is striking to me, Ron. I mean, when I first heard the issue, when I first heard there was a tape, when I first heard there were real facts that were damning to Sean Miller, I thought it was over. And then Miller came back and was pretty convincing in his retort.
No, it just goes to show you, ESPN ran the story first and said they had all the info they've known, they've learned the hard way from doing these things in the past.
Sure.
But then Sports Illustrated came out and said, oh, no, it was, you know, wrong timing, wrong year. They messed up their dates. So, I don't know. I still think something's fishy, but, man, innocent until proven guilty.
When we come back, we get a chance to talk to NFL Network's Brian Baldinger about all things NFL Combine. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
Kane is in the building. Now.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
Well, joining us now on SB Nation Radio is Brian Baldinger. He is an analyst for NFL Network and a former NFL player. Brian, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
My pleasure, David. Nice to be with you. Thanks.
Well, we'd love to talk to you about the quarterbacks. So much has been made of them at the combine, and it's hard to sort of sort out who's number one, two, or three, or four even. How do you rank these quarterbacks?
Well, it's early, Dave. It really is. I'm actually at NFL Films right now. I'm watching Josh Allen here from Wyoming. So, look, there's five or six guys that we're going to talk about nearly every single day for the next 7 weeks. So you try to keep it as fresh as you can. I think when you see Josh Allen, since that seems to be just one of the first guys that kind of roll out of everybody's mouth, I mean, I think when you see him in person, you see him throw it. I think it's probably more impressive than watching him on tape because he does have a strong arm. And you can see it, but I think sometimes when you see like a guy like Carson Wentz, that size, snap it and flick it, you know, it's a little bit more impressive. His accuracy is obviously an issue. And I don't know how much more that can be improved, but it's an issue. Sam Darnold probably is as talented as anybody. But we've also seen him, you know, turn the ball over probably more than anybody would like. And Josh Rosen is probably the most talented, but he's got an injury history. And Baker Mayfield might be the best overall player at that position, but people aren't really enamored by his size. Lamar Jackson, I think there's a lot of things like about Lamar. There's going to be a lot of challenges going to the NFL level, a guy that runs as much as he does. We haven't seen guys, you know, stay healthy like that, but he did run for over 3,000 yards the last 2 years. So, and he wants to play quarterback. So we got to see just how people want to evaluate him as a quarterback, knowing full well that, you know, it's the first hint of color coming out. I mean, he's going to take off with the ball. So that's not really how you want to kind of build your offense, but somebody's going to give him an opportunity.
We're talking to Brian Baldinger, NFL analyst for the NFL Network. So who stood out to you most at the combine? Is Barkley the guy who's turned the most heads?
Well, I think he turned a lot of heads. I mean, obviously, when for whatever these measurements are worth, because players come in all shapes and sizes, and, you know, Larry Fitzgerald, you know, might turn out to be the most prolific pass catcher outside of Jerry Rice we've ever seen, but you know, he's never had a great combine run, but he's been a great player. So, you know, the numbers could mean whatever you want them to mean. But, I mean, when you look at what Saquon has done at Penn State the last 3 years, look at what he did as a sophomore, you know, what he did as a freshman at Ohio State. You look at him in some of the big games and you see the production. And then you go and you see, okay, the size, the weight, the speed, the strength, the explosion, all those kind of things. You go, wow. How many guys can physically measure up to what he just did this past weekend? Not many guys in the history of the game can kind of measure up, but, you know, he had a lot of games this year where he was not a dynamic player. And so you go, why is that? You know, is it vision? Is it the offensive line? Is it the system? Is it team stacking bucks? That's what people have to go look at right now when they say, why was he even more explosive than 1,200 yards that he ran for at Penn State this year?
We're talking to Brian Baldinger of the NFL Network. So let me ask you this. Assuming that the top picks are quarterbacks and or Barkley, who's the next non-quarterback position player to go in this draft?
Well, I think you could see offensive linemen go. You know, I think, you know, Quentin Nelson from Notre Dame could be, you know, at the top of that list. I think a guy like Vita Vea, you know, a defensive tackle at Washington, who's just got, you know, tremendous Polynesian power. And I think he has a real upside to what he can do after running a 5.140. I think those guys could easily fall in that top. You know, I think that there's probably a couple of defensive backs that might fall in that category here. You're talking about top 10 type players. I mean, I think a lot of this still has to be juggled. You know, does Harold Landry, is he a top 10 player right now out of Boston College? You know, is Chubb from North Carolina State a top 10 player? I think, you know, teams really have to get the private workouts in, get the pro days in. I think there's a lot of information that still has to be accumulated before we
kind of really see what the top 10 is going to be.
Well, it is funny. Everybody needs to do a mock today, right? So we've already got our own slotting. But to your point, there's a whole lot of evaluation yet to come. We're talking to Brian Baldinger, NFL Network. So let's look at one of your former teams. I guess Nick Foles is available if the price is right. What would it take to pry Nick Foles out from the Eagles?
Well, I see some of the compensations have been thrown out. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to offer the Eagles a number one draft pick for Nick Foles. Obviously, there's some needy quarterback needy teams. There's a lot of quarterbacks in this draft. There's Kirk Cousins out there, maybe a Case Keenum. But I don't think anybody's going to give up a number one pick to Nick Foles. He was originally a third-round pick in 2012 for the Eagles. I think if somebody, you know, offered the Eagles a third-round pick, I think the Eagles might make that deal. I think they really like Nate Sudfeld, the third quarterback that they picked up from Washington at the start of the season. So I think they'd feel comfortable. His contract is not an easy contract to fit in. He's owed a lot of money this year. Nick signed a 2-year deal last year, but I think it's going to be less than a first round pick. And if somebody offered the Eagles a second or third round pick, I think they would do the deal because I think they like Nate Sudfeld. But if they don't come in with that type of compensation, the Eagles would be crazy to trade him, knowing full well that, A, Carson may not be ready to start the season. He might not. And then, B, how many better backup quarterbacks could you get than Nick Foles and what he did this postseason?
But I think you make a great point that with Nate Sudfeld, if they've got a guy they like who's their third quarterback today, it makes it a lot easier to trade away Foles, particularly with the uncertainty around Wentz. Let me ask you about the Browns. I can't remember going into a draft where one team had so many assets, the two high number one round picks and the two high second round and then another pick in the second round, so three number twos as well. They almost control the top of this draft. Do you see them taking quarterback at one and coming back and trying to get Barkley at four or inverting that?
Well, they had a lot of assets last year. You know?
Yeah, they did.
They win a game. So, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, I think John Dorsey is going to help them out a great deal, the newly acquired general manager. I think they're going to draft a quarterback. I mean, I think that, you know, watching Deshaun play last year, I mean, he really struggled. Game in, game out with accuracy, decision-making, timing. Now, you know, I mean, it was not a great team around him, but I would say, if they don't really enter the Kirk Cousins sweepstakes to try to get Kirk, I think they will draft a quarterback. Now, whether it's at one or four, I don't know. But they have options, and that's a good thing. And I'm sure that, you know, their phone lines will be open. And I think they might be, you know, in this draft. I mean, it's fairly, really early right now. But if they have a guy that they target with the first pick, whether it's a quarterback or running back or whoever it might be, if I think they'd be crazy to trade it. If you love a guy that you want to build around, then use the first pick. And if it's a quarterback, if it's Darnold or Baker or whatever, then draft him and do what good teams do. Surround your quarterback with as much weapons and as good an offensive line as you possibly can, the way the Eagles continue to do around Carson Wentz.
We're talking to Brian Baldinger of NFL Network. So let me ask you about the Dallas Cowboys. They have, of course, a pick at 19 in the first round. What do you see as their biggest need?
Well, I think it depends a little bit on what they decide to do with Dez Bryant. You know,
yep.
A lot of consternation right now. I mean, I think if Dez was not a part of the roster next year for whatever reason, I think they certainly need a number one wide receiver. If he's not there, Jason Witten is not getting any younger. I don't see him doing that at first pick. Defensively, they added four rookies last year to the defense, and they all contributed. They had a lot of really good rookies, you know, Xavier Woods and Lewis. I mean, all those guys kind of developed and came on as the season went on. Even Taco Charlton developed as the season went on. I could see them continuing to address the defense. And then, look, I mean, when Tyron Smith went down last year, the entire team fell apart.
Yep.
So can they go offensive line? You know, Mike McGlinchey or Quentin Nelson. I mean, I could see them saying, you know what, when we fortified our offensive line, our offense was really good. and that made our defense better too. So, and when, you know, when the quarterback gets protected like he did in 2016, he was really good. So maybe they decide that they go back to that old formula of continue to build with offensive linemen and spend a pick like that. I don't think anybody would say it's foolish to do this with the success they've had with the three number one picks that they drafted there.
We're talking to Brian Boldinger, former NFL player and with the NFL Network. Okay, you mentioned the Kirk Cousins sweepstakes. Where do you see the best fit for Kirk Cousins?
Well, I think Kirk could fit in a lot of places. I mean, I think he started 48 straight games for the Redskins, and he's been really good in those 48 games. He's thrown 36 interceptions in those 48 games, and a lot of them were batted balls or dropped. I mean, he's been very good. But I think Denver is the place. I mean, you watch the Denver Broncos. They've got a lot of pieces in place. They still have a lot of pieces on defense. The offensive line improved. They've got some good wide receivers. I mean, you know, the quarterback position was dreadful last year. And I know, you know, John Elway has come out and basically said that, you know, we're going to push it here at this position. We got to solidify that position. So if I was Kirk Cousins and I had John Elway as a general manager, I had a lot of guys that won a Super Bowl not long ago, have been to another Super Bowl, you know, a number of those players. I mean, that'd be the best team, best ready-made team that you could go to right now. So I think it'd be a good fit in Denver, but I'm sure that the Jets and, you know, a bunch of other teams, Minnesota, a bunch of other teams out there, and I think the Vikings would be another good choice. I think Denver and Minnesota would be the two best choices for Kirk Cousins, because he's not going to complete rebuilding projects.
No, both those teams and certainly the Vikings appear to have all the pieces, though they need a quarterback. One team that has a lot of pieces and seemingly has recommitted to its quarterback, the Jacksonville Jaguars, signing Blake Bortles. Do you think they're done? I mean, there's a lot of talk that maybe they'll draft a quarterback as well, just in case Blake doesn't really work out.
Well, he improved this year, and he got him into the AFC Championship game. I mean, they had the lead in the fourth quarter against the New England Patriots. I'd say that, you know, considering he lost all three of his top wide receivers, and Allen Hurns and Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee was in and out of the lineup. So, I mean, considering all the things that happened, I'd say he played pretty well. I just know David Caldwell, the general manager, who loves. Really, really admires Blake Bortles and thinks that he could be a really top-flight quarterback. I'd be shocked if they draft anybody in the first round at quarterback. Now, they may draft one later on in Logan Woodside out of Toledo, somebody like that later on in the draft. But I think after the extension they've just given Blake Bortles, I think they're pretty much locked into him. I think they feel pretty good about it, too.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate the insights on all things NFL. You've been listening to SB Nation Radio. Brian, again, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Anytime, Dave.
Take care.
Have a good night.
Well, great to have Brian Baldinger on the phone with us. Let me pause here. My social media is blowing up to the thousands of people writing in wondering where the Gloss is. I have big news. Carla Dawson, the real Gloss, has just left the school board, and apparently she's entered into a phone booth, and she's changing into her other identity, her nighttime identity, the Princess of Darkness, the biggest Raiders fan known to mankind. She's in the building, and when we return, Carla Dawson will weigh in and join us on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Fire it up. The lights have gone back on in the building because the Gloss has entered the building and she's ready for show.
I have spun out of the phone booth, new outfit in tow.
Wow.
New life on. Here we go.
Black and silver from head to toe. You know, the rub was that every week, you are the Gloss, I'm the Boss, you gloss up. You put on all these great things. You've got your lip gloss you put on before the show.
I do. The same one, yeah.
In your absence, in his attempt to make me feel better, Ron Culver put on some gloss on his lips.
I noticed a little cherry bling flavored. Bling on those lips, Ron.
A little shine, baby.
A little cherry flavored. simply for me.
Oh, he's got the lip smackers. That
it was
a little
the
flavor,
smacking,
flavor,
though. It
flavor.
Sort of bothered me. It was a distraction.
I'm channeling my inner Johnny Weir.
Well, you wear it
my
well.
My spirit animal. You know that. I love that.
Yeah, well, in the hierarchy of gloss, we've got way, way, way up there, tied for first, Johnny Weir and Carla Dawson. Yeah. And you, Ron Covert, way, way, way down below.
Well, I have to acknowledge this real quick. In true Princess of Darkness fashion, her first comments to me weren't hello, weren't anything like that. It was a reference to the fact that I am a Chargers fan, that it is needed of me to keep running back and forth because, you know, I was joining you on air, so I'd have to jump in the studio, jump back over here.
Yes.
And it was needed for me to do that because the Chargers, when you're watching a game, you're mainly sitting down. You don't stand up to cheer.
Oh, she's tough.
I hate to admit it. That's true.
So, it wasn't hello, Ron. Nice to see you. It was, I'm glad you're running back and forth. You need the exercise.
This is a hard place for me to be between you two. And the Raiders and the Chargers rivalry, Princess of Darkness and the Charger hopeful. It's a tough place for me.
I do need to climb out of the black hole, Ron. I'm sorry. You know, just been brought up in that, and it's just ingrained. It's not a good thing, but...
But no. To the thousands of Twitter followers who've been wondering where Carla Dawson is, she's here. She has arrived, and we return. She will be here for hour number two on SB Nation Radio.